So today is the 6th of October 2019 in Leicester, UK, and we're going to look at the upcoming month, which is just about to begin, the upcoming lunar month of Kartik, also called the month of Damodar. And if you've been hanging around the International Society for Krishna Consciousness for more than a couple of years, you definitely know that we do some special things during this month. And you might wonder, well, why do we do those things and what is this month about? Yes? So, probably most of you already know, but we follow a lunar calendar rather than a solar calendar. The only festival we have that is on the solar calendar is one we don't observe much, called Makara Sankranti. But everything else is according to the moon. Now, of course, the lunar calendar and the solar calendar don't exactly line up. Yes? Right? So every 3 years we add an extra month. So the Muslims follow a lunar calendar, but they don't do that. They never make an adjustment for the solar calendar. And because of that, all the Muslim holidays move around the year. So you've all heard of Ramadan, where the Muslims fast from sunrise to sunset. So, you know, 1 year that's going to be in January, the next year it's going to be in February, the next year it's going to be in March. So sometimes it's in December where there's a very short day, sunrise to sunset, and sometimes it's in June when there's a very long day, sunrise to sunset, because they never adjust the lunar calendar for the solar calendar. So that would be a very different way of having holidays, wouldn't it? Like, you know, here in the UK, Christmas is always in December. It's always a winter holiday. We think of certain holidays that go with certain seasons. But in the Muslim calendar, it moves around the year. So in order to avoid that, in our Vaishnav calendar, we add an extra month every 3 years. And that extra month is also considered quite special. So there are different times of the year, different times of the day, different times of a month that are considered more favorable for a spiritual life. And it's not difficult to understand this concept. Just like those of you who drive to work, you know that there are certain times when the road is easier to navigate on because there are fewer cars. So certain times, you're likely to have a traffic jam. We call it rush hour. I don't know why we call it rush hour, because it's when everyone's going very slowly. We should call it snail hour. Right? So when people are going to work and when they're coming back from work, or right before a holiday weekend or right after a holiday weekend, making a trip that would normally take a half an hour might take you 3 or 4 hours. Correct? Right? And if you drive on the roads at 1 in the morning, you're not likely to find any traffic at all. So it's like that with this whole universe, that there are different times for different things. And the way that this is calculated, I should ask, when do we end?
4:30, 4:45.
Okay. So the way this is calculated is according to what's called, what Srila Prabhupada translates as the modes of nature. Now the word is guna. Guna means qualities. And there's three gunas or qualities that control everything in this world. And they're called in Sanskrit sattva, rajas, and tamas. And different times. So good to see you again. When I was here last time, you didn't have the deities here. It's been that long since I've been here.
Too long.
Way too long. Way too long. Everything is progressing nicely, step by step.
By your blessings?
I'm not even here. You can't give me the slightest bit of credit. So these modes, the gunas, they control what activities are more easily done. And their influence is there throughout the day, different times of the day, throughout the week, throughout a month, throughout a year, and throughout our lifetime. So a little bit about, we don't want to talk too much about the gunas, but a little bit about their energy. So the gunas are different kinds of false ego. They're different kinds of, like, a feeling of ego and pride, but different moods. So in tamas guna, in the tamas mode, it's the mood is, I'm really laid back. I do something, you know, if something's easy, then I'll do it. You know, I mean, I'll eat healthy food. If they're serving a healthy, you know, plant burger at McDonald's, I'll buy it. And if they're not, I'll buy the beef. I'll just, whatever's easy. I'm not going to make much effort for anything. I'm not an ambitious person. I'm just kind of laid back. I'll be a good person if it's easy. You know, I'll be honest if it's easy, but I'm more interested in just getting everything done as easy as possible. I mean, there's all kinds of things I'd like to do, but, you know, if it's hard work, forget it. I'm not like all these ambitious people running around trying to control the world. I just can't go to work, watch the football game, have my beer, have my romantic partner, go to bed. That life's good enough for me. But don't get in my way. I'm really good at insulting other people. And really heavy into tamas is, you know, intoxication, nightclubs, criminality. Then you have ego in rajas. So ego in rajas is mostly what propels the good in human society, the people who build the museums, you know, and the big hospitals and the schools and feeding thousands of people and getting their statue up in the park and their name in the history book and their big house and their BMW and their Jaguar and a big flat screen TV in every room, and they go to church or temple every week and they pray to God and they're a good person and they pay their taxes. And then you have false ego in sattva. False ego in sattva is like, my happiness is within. I'm very kind. I'm very forgiving. Not because I want my statue up in the park, but because I just want to have that really nice feeling inside that I'm a good person. I forgive people so that I'll feel free, not so that anybody will praise me. And, you know, I try to live simply. I'm not very ambitious. I don't really want to do a big thing in the world. And I want to treat everybody with kindness and with respect. So those are the three gunas. So Mr. Thomas, Mr. Roger, and I don't know who Mr. Sattva would be, Mr. Sam. And they control different times of the day. So very early in the morning, all three are in equilibrium. So Sam, Roger, and Thomas are all just kind of getting along and no one is dominant. And then Mr. Sam, Mr. Sattva becomes dominant. And then soon after sun rises, Roger becomes very dominant. And in the evening, Mr. Thomas becomes very dominant. And depending on what kind of ego a person has, they'll be able to become active at that time. So people who are very controlled by Thomas, they become very active at night. And we see most of the activities in Thomas happen at night. And most of the activities in Rajas happen in the middle of the day. People working hard to earn money and make the world bigger and better and bigger and better and bigger and better and bigger and better. And that happens during the day. And in the early morning is the best time for prayer and meditation. And people who are very much in Thomas, they can't function when sattva is active. It doesn't give them, they can't pull any energy from it. There's nothing in them that resonates. And people who are very much in sattva, when Thomas is active, all they can do is go to sleep. Also, it just doesn't resonate. So there's different times of the day, different times of the year that are controlled by these three. But there's something beyond just sattva, rajas, and tamas, and that is transcendence, that is bhakti. Now, on one hand, bhakti is called ahoitukiya pratiyata. Bhakti is not dependent on these changing of the modes of ego in the world. You can do bhakti at 2 in the morning, and you can do bhakti at 6 in the morning, and you can do bhakti at 2 in the afternoon. And bhakti doesn't have any material conditions on it. Bhakti has to do with the soul. and God. And the soul and God ultimately have nothing to do with this material nature and with the changing modes. Having said that, bhakti is easier to do when which mode is active? Sattva. Now, a sattva is also a kind of ego, and so sometimes you'll find people who are very much in sattva don't take to bhakti because they think they're already very spiritual. And so they're not so interested in bhakti. Huh? So in one sense, sattva is favorable for bhakti. In another sense, bhakti can be done when any of the modes are active. Now, although bhakti can be done at any time, although sattva is particularly favorable for it, there are also times that are really open for bhakti. There are times when it's a special facility to do bhakti. And Srila Prabhupada compares this to having a sale at a shop. So, you know, Srila Prabhupada ran a pharmaceutical business when he was a grihastha. We don't talk about that much. Sometimes I think we should. Sometimes I think we should also talk about what does it mean to be an ideal person working in the world. You know, we tend to see Srila Prabhupada just as a renunciate and forget that he was also, he was a pure devotee from birth. I mean, I was right there in the airport in New York when this reporter was asking Srila Prabhupada, from what age did you realize God? Prabhupada said, that I cannot say from the age. He said, I have always been God conscious. And the reporter said, but Swamiji, from what age? Prabhupada said, my whole life, not any particular age. But what age? What age, Swamiji? What age? Kept pressing. And Prabhupada said, well, maybe 4 or 5 years old. So Srila Prabhupada was a pure devotee his whole life. It wasn't just that in his older age when he was a renunciate. So sometimes we forget that he was also a pure devotee as a married man with a business. Anyway, he had a pharmaceutical business, so he knew very well how this works. And he said that sometimes when you want to get new customers, you have a sale. Yeah? Right? What's the purpose of having a sale? You bring in people to buy something who wouldn't normally buy it. So sometimes Krishna has a sale on bhakti. Although we can say that bhakti can be done anytime, but when the modes are in sattva, it's most conducive. It's easier to do bhakti. It's easier to sit and meditate. It's easier to chant Hare Krishna when sattva guna is operative. But sometimes it's super, super, super easy to do bhakti. Everything is just open, not because of the modes, but because Krishna has a sale. And you know, out in the business world, there are scheduled sales, right? Like the big retailer Amazon, they have a prime day, I think, when everything goes on sale. Or I don't know if everything goes on sale, I never really checked it out. But they have some day, oh, you're going to be able to get it on sale. Or I don't know if they do that here, but in America, the day after Thanksgiving, because Thanksgiving is this big holiday in America. And the next day, everybody has off. It's always a Friday. So it's a long weekend. People have Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday off. And it's the end of November, so people do their Christmas shopping then. So they have huge sales on that day to try to attract customers into their shops that wouldn't normally come. So Krishna also has a regularly scheduled sale. And Srila Prabhupada explains this in a letter to Jayapataka Maharaj that he wrote in 1972. And when does Krishna have this sale? When is bhakti on sale? In Kartik, yes. There's also other times when bhakti is on sale. What are some of the other times? Purushottamas. Purushottamas is the extra month that's added every 3 years. So that's a much more occasional sale. You have to catch it once every 3 years. And that month is a different time, will be different times of the solar year. So it's not always put in at the same place. So sometimes it'll be in May, sometimes in August, sometimes in January. Yes, so there's Purushottamas. What else? When else is there a sale?
Ekadashi.
It's also a sale on Ekadashi. When else?
Akshaya
Tritiya. I'm not sure if bhakti's on sale there. I think that's within the modes, but I may be wrong. Yes, all the big festival days, like Janmashtami and Ram Navami. So all the big festival days, bhakti is on sale. Now, Srila Prabhupada said specifically about Kartik in this letter to Jayapataka Maharaj, he said that we who've made our life, I'm paraphrasing, we who made our life the service of Krishna, we don't need a sale because we're already a regular customer. He said the regular customers, they will pay any price. So those of us, Prabhupada said, for us, Kartik is every day. So those of us who every day are chanting japa, having kirtan, worshipping the deity, eating prasadam, we're going to engage in bhakti whether it's on sale or not. Right? We're not going to say, well, I'm having a good day today, I think I'll chant Hare Krishna. Today I'm not having a good day, I won't chant Hare Krishna. So Prabhupada says Kartik is particularly for pulling in the new customers. Which means that one thing that we should think about in terms of Kartik, and I know we do this I probably shouldn't say it, because it's being recorded, but we do this in some parts of the world where we're not supposed to be preaching Krishna consciousness at all. But in those parts of the world whose names I shall not mention, we particularly go out to people at Kartik and say, you have a really good opportunity at this time of the year for your spiritual life. Now, even if we're a regular customer of bhakti, if we're not that serious about bhakti, we can use this sale time to become more serious. So even if you say, well, every day I do bhakti, but this is a time where it's cheaper. It's being given out as a sale price. Now, it's a fact that when Srila Prabhupada was here on the planet, that we in ISKCON didn't make such a big deal about the Kartik month. At that time, ISKCON was a relatively small organization. Almost everybody lived in temple ashrams, and almost everybody was just totally focused on the Sankirtan movement. But I think especially now, as we're really becoming a society, Prabhupada wanted an international society for Krishna consciousness, not international ashrams for Krishna consciousness. So as we're really developing into a society, these times when bhakti is on sale perhaps become more important to us. Because I think for most of us, we'd like to have a time where we can say, well, if I really concentrate on my Krishna consciousness at this time, it will help me the rest of the time. Now, how this works is explained very nicely by Rupa Goswami in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which Srila Prabhupada has summarized in the Nectar Devotion. And he lists performing special activities in Kartik as one of the 64 limbs or 64 types of devotional service, and he gives evidence as to why that's the case. So the two evidences that he gives, one is that a person who does service for Krishna during Kartik will have their motivation changed. So generally in the world, why do people take up religion or spirituality? Some thoughts?
Stress.
Stress. Okay, they want to become peaceful. Why else? To demonstrate to others that they're good people?
To demonstrate, yeah, to others as a role model.
Okay.
Lifestyle.
Huh?
Lifestyle.
A lifestyle, okay. Why else do people take up religion or spirituality?
For their own gain.
Huh?
For their own gain.
Like what? Can you give me an example?
People might pray for those past exams, students.
Okay, so they're thinking that the universe is run by someone, and if I can just get his favor, then I'll be able to make kind of an end run around things. Right? If you know, it's kind of like you know the right person. You get a job because your dad's uncle's friend works in the company. Right? So you think, if I know God, he'll be able to get me an in. You know, he'll get me the job. One of the funniest things that I ever saw about that was teenagers, young adults, they had taken their exams already, and they had them in an envelope, their results, and then they're praying. Like, Do you think he's going to change the number inside the envelope? You know, to pass the exams, to get a good job, to get the spouse that they want, to get children, so many things, to get money. Now, of course, we do say that if you want these things, better to go to Krishna than to go to somebody else. So better to pray to God for these things than to forget about God. But that's not a very pleasant motive for Krishna. None of us would like that, would we? Would we like that? So I come from a very wealthy family, and one thing that irritated my parents was when they felt that people were making friends with them for their money. And in fact, when we traveled, my parents usually would use a different last name so that they wouldn't get harassed by people. But it was something I was very aware of growing up, that you know, people who seem to like you and seem to want a relationship with you might not care about you at all. So Krishna feels the same way. Now, Krishna is so eager for us to have any kind of relationship with him that even if we go to him for something where we want to use him, he's still happy that we've gone to him. But this is generally why people go to religion. What are some other reasons why people take to religion?
Fear.
Fear. That's a very big one. You know, I'm going to be punished. Maybe I'm going to go to hell. What's some other reasons?
Inquisitive.
To be inquisitive, they're curious. So a lot of people come to religion because they want to know, well, what's going on here? Is there a purpose to life? Who am I? What's the world made of? Yes, so they just may have some curiosity. Any other reasons?
Going through a bad patch.
They're going through a bad patch. Yes, many years ago, some of you remember Kalangana? She's passed away. But she used to be Bhaktivedanta Manor, and she pioneered the making of so many sweets from the milk from our own cows. So she and I were once taking a walk, and we were chanting Hare Krishna, and we saw this other woman walking, and she asked us for directions. And so Kalangana says, well, we're going that way, you can come with us. And then, much to my embarrassment, Kalangana started talking to this woman and trying to get her to chant Hare Krishna, which was, I felt really awkward about the whole thing. But anyway, Kalangana was really telling her, you know, you should pray with us, and you should chant with us. And the woman said, but everything's going well for me right now in my life. Why should I pray? I don't need to pray. If something's going badly, then I'll pray. And I thought that was just fascinating, this concept that, you know, I'll only talk to God when I'm in trouble. So we don't like that either, do we? Right? If somebody only calls us when they're in trouble. Right? So I have 14 grandchildren, and generally, if I want to talk to them, I have to contact them. They don't generally take the initiative to contact me. One of them does, but most of the other ones don't. So one of them contacted me. Oh, Hari Go! And I'm thinking, oh, I have a grandkid contacting me just to say hello. You know? Of course, that wasn't the case. So it was, you know, after a couple minutes, Grandma, is there something you could do for me? I'm like, oh, okay. Right? So to contact God when we're in trouble, when there's some kind of difficulty, is very common. My father used to tell me the expression, there's no atheists in foxholes. Have you heard that? You know what a foxhole is? We don't mean a literal fox. But in the military, when you're moving ahead with the foot soldiers, with the infantry, in order to protect yourself from being shot at, you may dig a hole in the ground. And then you're staying in the hole and you're shooting the enemy out of the hole. That's called a foxhole. So they say there's no atheists in foxholes. You know, you're in a very dangerous, precarious position, stuck in this hole in the ground, having people shoot at you. So even people who say they don't believe in God, when they're there, they pray. And we find in our modern society, our very secular society, where people don't talk much of God, when there's a catastrophe, people pray, isn't it? And even the national leaders, they'll come on television and we're asking everybody to pray. Yeah? So these are the main reasons people take up religion. Now in Kartik, if you worship the Lord, what happens is that your reason for worshiping the Lord will change very quickly and very easily. Now, in general, we say if you worship the Lord for any reason, Yam Krota Kama Sahaja Prani Adi Bhitti Vatsaya Moha Guru Gorva Sevi Babai Sanchin Chitasam Sadhusin Tanamapurite, whatever reason you have for worshiping the Lord Himself is so purifying. Pavitram Idamutama. He's so purifying that any worship of the Lord for any reason starts to change one's motivations. But in Kartik, this happens very easily and very quickly. So if you start, and maybe we shouldn't tell you that, but anyway, maybe that should just kind of happen. But if you worship the Lord for your exam results, or to make money, or to have your wife stop yelling at you, or to have your back stop hurting, or whatever's going on, or just because you're curious and you want to know how the universe works, what will happen is if you worship the Lord in Kartik, very quickly you'll fall in love with Him. So why is that? Because He manifests His glories more openly and more obviously. Like, I'm sure many of you are familiar with the Rath Yatra festival, where Lord Jagannath, normally it's very restricted who can see Him, the deity of the Lord. But on this festival day, He comes out in the street and anybody can see Him, anybody can make an offering to Him. Practically anybody can touch Him. You can go up on the cart and touch Him. He's more accessible. So in Kartik, the Lord's beauty, the Lord's kindness, the Lord's mercy, all of the Lord's qualities, His compassion, His heroism, intelligence, playfulness, youthfulness, is all that more obvious to us. He's not covering Himself more. Right, there's this nice prayer in the Upanishad, please remove your effulgence so I can see your form. So if we want to see God, Kartik is a good time. It's when He comes, it's like, you know, the royalty coming out on the balcony, or the Lord going out on His chariot. It's coming out before us, here I am. And the devotee worships Him in Kartik then, even if the devotee starts out wanting something else, wanting to be cured of their disease or to get a lot of money or whatever it may be, they'll become so attracted to the Lord that pretty soon their motivation for worship will be simply to love and to serve. Then the other great thing that happens that Rupa Goswami mentions, as I said, Rupa Goswami gives two main evidences for why Kartik is bhakti on sale. And the first one we just mentioned, that no matter what motive you start with, you're going to end up, most likely, with wanting love. And that's the most beautiful thing, isn't it? Isn't that ultimately what we all want? We may not want to admit it, because it makes us very vulnerable to admit that. But what we all really want is to know that somebody loves us and to have someone that we can repose our love in. And of course, in this world, that's never perfect, is it? Right? We may think we found somebody, well, with this person it will be perfect. But it isn't. There's something imperfect about it. There's something about us that the other person really just doesn't love. They may choose to ignore it, they may choose to tolerate it, but there's something about us that the other person, if they're honest, will say, I don't find this particular thing about you lovable. In fact, I rather wish you didn't have that particular thing. And there's something about the other person that we won't find particularly lovable, isn't it? That we'll be like, you know, I love you, but that thing, I don't know about that. And it doesn't matter whether that person is your mother, your father, your husband, your wife, your son, your daughter, your sister, your brother, whatever it is. There's some imperfection in the love. I was just the other day talking to a couple who was struggling, and they were saying, you know, we just feel if we are what we are, that we end up causing distress to the other person. And I was saying, well, love doesn't mean you can just like totally be, oh, here I am. Take me or leave me. And he said, it's not like that. You know, you also have to moderate yourself somewhat, so that you don't take your faults and shove them in the other person's face all of the time. But we're looking for someone like this. We're looking for somebody that I can be completely genuine with. And they love me anyway. They love me for me. that they don't see that I have a fault. And that I can love them completely. That there's not some part of them that I say, well, I don't really like this, but I kind of love them anyway. And the only person like that is Krishna. There isn't any other person like that. So if we can feel so much satisfaction in life, so much meaning in life, so much value to life, with our imperfect love in this world, isn't that what gives us meaning? Yeah? The people we love and the people who love us? You know, if you had a lot of money and a beautiful house and you were able to build a great big hospital and your name is in the history books and you stopped a world war but nobody loved you and you didn't have anyone that you loved, would that be a fulfilling life? And if you're just, you know, a simple person with a simple job and a little place, and only, you know, only 20 people are going to come to your funeral, but with those 20 people, you had a really deep, loving relationship. You really loved them, and they loved you. Wouldn't you say that was a satisfying life, more than the other? Yes? So if we can feel that much satisfaction and meaning from our imperfect love in this world, imagine how much satisfaction and meaning we would find if we love the perfect person who loves us completely and fully, exactly for who and what we are. And that's what happens in Karti. A little service to the Lord, a little offering of a candle or a lamp, a saying of some prayers, that love which is already within us. Rupa Goswami says that love of God is already within us. He says we don't have to purchase it from another source. But it becomes very easily awakened. Again, it's on sale. We don't have to do much to awaken it. It becomes very, very easily awakened. So we said there's another reason why bhakti's on sale. And this month is called Kartik. It's also called Damodar. And says that the Lord in his Damodar form is especially affectionate. And so in the same way, this month, Rupa Goswami, also Jiva and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, say that this month is very, very affectionate. Now what does it mean when you're very affectionate? It means you magnify very small things. Something that's good, even if it's very small, you take it as very important. Isn't that what it means? If you're affectionate? Is that an okay definition? So I was visiting my granddaughter and her family a few days ago. So they have a little boy, he's 1.5 years old. And he's sitting in his little chair and he's eating some fruit and yogurt. And he has one of these baby spoons. It's like a very thick, the handle's very thick plastic. So he's in his little chair with a bib on, and he has his little bowl of fruit and yogurt, and he has his little spoon, and he's pretty good. You know, he's getting the spoon, the yogurt, and he's putting it in his mouth. I was noticing, and he's pretty good with that. And my granddaughter looks at her baby, and she says, "Grandma, look how expert he is with the spoon." And I looked at her, and I said, "You know, he is pretty good, but his whole face is covered with yogurt, too. And his hand is covered with yogurt, and the spoon is covered with yogurt, and the tray is covered with yogurt." I said, "Did you notice that?" She says, "No. I just noticed how good he was with the spoon." So it's like that. When we have affection, we magnify anything good, even if it's very small. So especially Krishna in this Damodar form, and especially in the Damodar month, Krishna makes a big deal out of any small service. Now, he tends to do that in general. And the most famous and amazing and outrageous story where Krishna magnified a small service. Can anyone think what the exemplar story is of that?
Pulling the chariot of Arjuna.
Chariot of Arjuna. How would that be magnifying a small service?
It's not very significant. According to other people.
To be a chariot driver.
Yeah.
Oh no, I'm not explaining it well then. magnifying a small service of the devotee. Okay. Sorry. Yes.
Draupadi offers Krishna a small piece of cloth and Krishna has placed lying there.
Okay, that's a very good example. Of course, the problem with that example is that Draupadi is always in love with God. So even though that was a particular small service that she did, her whole life was a life of service. Yes? Putana is usually the epitome of this particular quality of the Lord. So Putana was a witch. And she particularly killed babies. That was her specialty, her witch specialty. And she was employed by the government of that time to look for Krishna and kill him. Because there was this prophecy that Krishna would kill the king, King Kamsa. So he said, I know you're really good at killing babies, and I know that the person who's going to kill me has just recently been born, so I want you to kill all the babies. And she did it very cleverly. She used her magic to make herself appear as an exceptionally beautiful woman. And even nowadays, there's a lot of studies shown that attractive people get more facility than unattractive people. Are you aware of this? Like, if there's a car broken down on the side of the road and the person standing next to the car is attractive, they're much more likely to get people to help them. If you apply for a job and you're physically attractive, you're more likely to get the job. If you're a salesperson and you're attractive, you're more likely to sell things. We tend to trust people who are more physically attractive. Anyway, we just do. Also, people who are taller. Taller people will earn more money on average over their lives. It's quite interesting. So we tend to trust people more if they're taller and if they're more attractive. I don't know why, but anyway, it just is what it is. So this witch took advantage of this aspect of human psychology, and she used her magic to make herself look absolutely extraordinarily attractive, much more so than any ordinary human would be able to look. And so she entered into the place where Krishna was appearing as a small baby. And because she looked so beautiful, everybody just trusted her and let her pick up the baby. And then her method was to go in such a way that nobody would restrict her. And then she put poison on her breast, and her idea was that she would go to suckle the baby and the baby would then die. And she killed many babies in this way. So, of course, when she did this to Krishna, when he started to nurse from her, he killed her, even though he was just a little tiny baby, like 2-3 months old. And when she died, her original form as a witch was revealed, and it was shown that this witch had come to kill Krishna, but Krishna had killed her. So when he killed her, it says that she, the soul, left that body, and she went to the kingdom of God, where she took a role as a motherly figure to Krishna. Because she had come doing what a mother would do, to offer her breast milk to the baby. But really, she wasn't being motherly at all. She was trying to poison this child. The motherliness was a device. It was a disguise. So generally speaking, if somebody disguises himself as a friend in order to do something harmful to us, would we take their friendly disguise as a positive? No. In fact, we would take that as an increase of negative. We'd say someone who comes outwardly as an enemy is better than an enemy who comes disguised as a friend. Am I correct? Right? We actually get much more upset when someone who appears to be friendly is actually inimical. Because we feel that they've betrayed us. In addition to attacking us, they've added the betrayal. So we consider that a strong negative. But Krishna didn't take it like that. He said, because you came disguised as a mother, I accept you as a mother, even though your intention was to kill me. So Krishna, in general, takes a very small good thing and magnifies it, even to the point with Putana, where he took something that arguably wasn't even good at all, that it was just had an appearance of good. So Krishna's like that in general. Like we talk about Nam Abbas, the shadow of the holy name. Like this morning I was hearing Prabhupada say that the name of Krishna is fully Krishna with all of his potencies. But there can be a shadow of the name. Like one name of Krishna is Rama. And people will say, I'm going to the Cinerama. And Krishna says, you said my name. I mean, we have this experience. We've been in a crowd of people that are all talking. And we think someone says our name and we pay attention. Yes? Has happened? We can all hear our name over a lot of noise. We're naturally attracted to the sound of our name. And we'll be attracted even if someone didn't really say our name, but just appeared to. Oh, did you call me? No, I said this. You know, like my name's Urmila, which is something like formula. In fact, that's what I tell people who aren't from India. If they say, what's your name? I say it's formula with MF. So if people are talking and they say, oh, that's the magic formula, I'm like, oh, did you call me? So Krishna's like that. If someone says, oh yeah, what's playing at the Cinerama tomorrow? Oh, they called me. Yes, they've started their spiritual life. So Krishna normally is like that. So imagine in Kartik, he's even more like that. How is that even conceivable? How could you be more magnifying a good quality than with Putana? That's really a big sale. Isn't it? Yes? That's like the shopkeeper who lies and says, we're selling below our cost. Don't ever believe that. Maybe if they're going out of business. But Krishna's never going to go out of business. But when Krishna says, I'm selling below cost, he's not lying. So a normal cost price, even Putana, becomes delivered. So it's even below that price. That's how big the sale is at Kartik. The Jiva Goswami says, the smallest service done during Kartik, Krishna feels, oh, I'm in debt. Oh no, I'm in debt now. Now I have to give this person my whole kingdom and all my opulence. So imagine, Kartik, with a little sincerity, to light one candle, say one prayer, chant one mantra, visit the temple, anything, Krishna will say, oh my, I'm so in debt. Now I have to give myself to this person. Now you might ask, well, why does Krishna want to put bhakti on sale to this extent? I mean, isn't he worried about making a profit? What's he going to do if he makes bhakti this easily available at below his cost price? You see, Krishna doesn't like it that we're suffering in this world. I know that that's a hard thing to believe, especially when we're in the middle of intense suffering, that we pray and it doesn't go away. It may seem that God wants us to suffer, that he doesn't care about us, that he doesn't hear us, but that's not actually true at all. He very, 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 very strongly wants us to be fully part of his own realm of unlimited, eternal, variegated happiness. He wants us to realize ourselves. And he is one of the liberations that Krishna gives is that the living entity gets equal opulence with him. He wants to share his spiritual power and opulence and happiness with us fully. That's what he wants. Don't we want that for people we love? Any of you who have children, don't you want your children to equally share it with you in your happiness? Or your friends? You don't go out for a day with your friend and say, look, don't eat as good of a meal as I have, okay? I mean, that's ridiculous. We want our friends to have as much fun as we have. We want our children, our family members, people we love, we want to share everything with them. And if there's someone we love that doesn't really want to be with us, it's painful, isn't it? Yes? So Krishna wants us He wants us to have our spiritual, so to speak, inheritance, daivak. And if we're turning away from it, I mean, he's eternal, unlimited bliss, so he doesn't feel sad in some material sense. But if we're turning away from it, he's very sorry. Why are you turning away from this? It's like if some friend were coming to your house to visit and you cooked a 20-course meal. And when they come, they say, oh, I'm not hungry. I stopped by and bought a bag of chips and Coca-Cola. I filled up on that. And you'd be like, what? You're eating Coca-Cola and chips? When I have dadiwaha and kofta and dokla, what are you doing? I cooked all day for you. So that's what it's like for Krishna. He's like, I have the whole spiritual existence for you and you're just drinking Coca-Cola and chips? What's your problem? So Krishna wants us to have this kind of happiness very, very much. But he's also interested in being fair. It's very important to Krishna that he's neutral, that he's fair, that he doesn't play favorites. It's explained that Krishna is so dependable that the atheists and the demons, they know I can follow the laws of the universe and I'll be okay. We do not have the kind of universe where if you're a good person but you're an atheist, that you're going to get punished. That's not our scriptures. I know there's other religions in the world that teach that. Doesn't matter how sinful you are, if you believe in God, you're going to heaven. It doesn't matter how good you are, if you're an atheist, you're going to hell. Do you want that kind of a God? That's just nepotism. You all know what nepotism is? If you don't, it's your homework. No, that's cruel. It's Sunday. You should get any homework on Sunday. All right. Nepotism is when you give favors to someone who's not qualified just because they're your friends or family. Yes? It's corruption. So Krishna doesn't want to be like that. Therefore, he wants to be neutral. You do good things, you get a good result. You do bad things, you get a bad result. And he wants to be neutral in terms of people turning to him and having a relationship with him. He doesn't want to push. Do we ever have people in life who are pushy about having a relationship with us and how ugh it is? You know, he wants to honor our free will and our own decision. So he's not going to push a loving relationship on us. He's going to be neutral. At the same time, he's not really neutral. He wants us to be ecstatically, eternally happy. He really, really cares. He's not neutral in the sense of being callous. He's not like, yeah, you can become spiritually realized, or you can suffer forever in illusion. I really don't care. No, that's not what he's thinking at all. The way he's thinking is, I intensely, intensely want you to have unlimited spiritual happiness and unlimited spiritual love and not any suffering at all. But I'm not going to even tiny, even minutely to any tiny, tiny degree force you to love. It's got to be completely voluntary. So how is he going to balance these two things? That our love for him is completely voluntary, and he's just neutral. As we love him, he will reciprocate. And at the same time, he so much wants us to share his happiness and share his opulence and share his glories. It belongs to us too. We are part of him, and he wants to share it with us. So how is he going to do that? He's going to do that by sometimes putting bhakti on sale below cost price. By doing that, the tiniest, infinitesimal effort on our part allows him to reciprocate with us without his charge of breaking neutrality. Well, they did something. They lit the candle. Okay. Here we go. So it doesn't take much to get great benefit during Kartik. And we have a lot, of course, we have many nice festivals throughout the year in our Vaishnava calendar, but we also have many opportunities for worshiping the Lord during Kartik. Every day we light a ghee lamp or a candle, and there's a nice prayer that we sing to the Lord as Damodar, but at least one can light a candle every day. And then we have some wonderful festivals in this month. So we have the festival of Lord Ramachandra returning to Ayodhya after 14 years of exile, when all of Ayodhya was lit with lamps. We have the festival when Krishna was taking the butter and breaking the butter pot, and Mother Yasoda tried to tie him up and he knocked over the Arjuna trees. That both happened on the same day, Diwali day. Both of those pastimes, different incarnations. We have Krishna lifting Govardhan Hill to save the residents of Vrindavan from a torrential rainstorm. One of the few festivals where we don't fast. I remember meeting some devotees. You know, I always like to ask people who didn't grow up in Krishna consciousness, how did you decide to join Krishna consciousness? This was in Australia. And this couple said that, well, we heard about the Hare Krishnas. We thought they called the Haris. You know, we heard about the Haris and we thought we'd go check it out. And they happened to come on Janmashtami. So they come on Janmashtami. Some of our temples, we do have food available throughout the day for guests. But this temple, they didn't. And there was nothing at all. You know, and the night's getting on, and it's getting on, and it's getting on, and it's getting on. And like, aren't you guys going to eat? No, we're fasting today. Well, all right, they thought, well, we don't want to fast. No one told them the fast gets broken at midnight. They just said, we're fasting. So this couple went out to a restaurant and got something to eat and then came back to the temple. And then about 11 o'clock, they went to bed. And then they wake up in the morning and they say, where's breakfast? They say, oh no, it's Vyas Puja Day. We're fasting again. They had a very strange idea of the Hare Krishnas that we're always fasting. But anyway, on most of our big festival days, we are fasting till midday or to the evening. But Govardhan Puja is just a feast day. It's our transcendental harvest festival and our festival of Krishna saving the devotees. Of course, then we have the time of Prabhupada leaving this planet. So we have some very big festivals that go on in this Kartik month. So those are opportunities. Festival days are also when bhakti is on sale. So bhakti is always on sale on a big festival day. And of course we have, as in every lunar month, we have two Ekadasis. So then you get a double, triple sale, right? The Kartik Ekadasi, the Kartik festival. So we invite everybody, if you have some interest in transcendence, you have some interest in spirituality, you have some interest in bhakti yoga, this is the time. This is the time. And if we're already a regular customer, well, this is the time we can stock up. And we can invite new people to partake of bhakti. So, thank you very much. Questions, comments, additions, subtractions? Yes? Well, there's some shastra that talk about the last 5 days of Kartik, and there's some special austerities. I did that once. I don't know if I want to repeat it. But anyway, there's some special austerities and fasting that people sometimes do on the last 5 days of Kartik. But then you've also got, as I say, the Ekadasis and the festival days. Anybody else? So what do we have now on the program for Jimna Puru? Kirtan. Okay. And Kirtan goes until what time?
20 minutes.
20 minutes. So thank you very much. Lovely to be back here after so long. Shubha Prabhupada ki jai.